Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 304 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host as usual. Today, my guest is Eric Pines. Eric is an attorney who operates now, I would say, a medium-sized law firm, total of about 29-30 employees, all told, eight of which I believe are attorneys, the rest staff members, and they're spread across multiple locations, as is, I think, the standard these days. You're going to have your law practice serving multiple physical locations, and often it makes sense to be remotely located. And so I wanted to have Eric on board because he can speak to and does the growth from a solo practice that he started in his garage, hiring a few friends to help him run his business, and has now moved on to, like I said, have this medium level practice, or some might even say that's large. I guess it's in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? Whether 30 employees is a small or medium law firm. But anyway, we talk about all the lessons learned, things he did right, things he did wrong, things he wished he had done differently. And he's got great insight into a lot of that. So without any further delay, here is Eric Pines. Eric Pines, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm honored to be here.
Well, I'm about honored, but thank you for the compliment. I'm glad to have you with us today, Eric. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. Basically, I began I lived in Israel for about 2 or 3 years. And right before that, I was working for the federal government. I quit my job to go there. I spent a little time there studying, came back, and fell into my first job because I had a gap on my resume, which was in-house counsel for a federal labor union, the largest local, AFGE 1923, mm-hmm. Social Security's labor union. I worked there for about 9 or 10 years, got bored out of my mind just because I think I had this entrepreneurial spirit in me. I know I do. And I felt like I had to do something else. And at that time, I had 5 young kids and my wife wanted to move closer to her family here in Houston, where I am now, Houston, Texas. So I moved from Baltimore to Houston. And when I got here, I had 2 choices. I could either work for the federal government, because that's what my background was in. I could work for the federal government as in-house counsel, or I could start my own firm. And I decided that the entrepreneur in me came out, and I decided to start my own firm. Started in my garage. We had it remade so I could work from there. And I was actually working for the union. I was working for a couple months out of there. Ended up starting my own firm there and took on a friend as a kind of a paralegal law student. Ended up becoming an attorney who worked with me. And I've grown from there to having an office, kind of one of those rental quick offices, shared space, to now I have mm-hmm. a firm with 22 employees and 8 attorneys.
Wow. It's a remarkable track of success and growth along those lines. We often are spurred on to this decision to go on our own out of necessity, oftentimes, or as you said, sometimes it's sheer boredom. You need to try something new. But hanging over you, the idea of 5 children, that creates a level of, shall we say, interest to make things work. I'm sure you felt that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. For sure. It is a huge leap of faith. Have 5 kids in private school. Yeah. Add that to the mix.
Right, and, right. Which is funding another country.
Yes, that's exactly what it's like, especially when they go to different schools. Then you can. So truthfully, the only way I could make that leap of faith is I was telling myself that my wife wanted to be home to be closer to family. So I'll just blame it on her if it doesn't work out.
You had took all the guilt off. You had a built-in scapegoat. Well done. So, all right. So not the kitchen table. It's at the table in the garage. So you started. Tell me about those early years. You said you had the entrepreneurial spirit. Where did that come from?
I would put that I didn't come from an entrepreneurial family. My father worked for the LA County Office of Education. He's a therapist, a psychologist as well, but he always worked for someone else. I think I read a book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I think many of us know that book. So when I read that book, it really struck a chord with me. So I would put it in sort of like I was born in, you know, if you look at my Myers-Briggs tests, I'm a big picture type person. I'm an intuitive, I'm a feeler. So I think that just was sort of built into me. I get bored by structure and the same thing over and over again.
It's interesting that you kind of recognize that the Myers-Briggs kind of assessment of who you're, a big thinker, feeler, reacting to your own emotions kind of thing. I find that the people who, and I count myself in that category, who find themselves in that frame, oftentimes take that leap off the edge because they have a sense that that's the right thing to do, or that that's what they want to do, or that they might be good at it. They're not sure, but they don't care. They're going to, you know, take the action and they'll figure it out along the way. Is that kind of how you felt?
Yeah, that's a very good assessment. It's a funny thing, actually. I don't know if you know the book, Do What You Are, but have you heard that book by Paul Tiger?
No, I do not. Do What You Are.
So that's actually a really good book about helping yourself find your own career with Myers-Briggs.
Okay.
And someone once gave me that. It was funny, on the back of the book, actually, he has a couple books. I was looking at the book called Speed Reading People. The back of the book is a phone number to call one time. So I gave him a call. I should say I gave the company a call. It ended up being him answering from his home. And we started talking and we discovered that we both have the same personality type ENFP and we had a lot in common. So I thought it was kind of funny that, you know, the person who wrote the book was the same as me, who was intrigued by the book and said kind of like what you're saying. Yeah. That basically we're looking at the big picture and we're looking at ideas and concepts, building something.
Yeah, I think those visionaries are the ones that lead the way oftentimes. You know, sometimes they're taking the slings and arrows, you know, ahead of others, but you know, that's how it fits in with their approach to life. I know that that's the case for me personally. So at that time, you know, you got this pressure of, you know, five kids and a wife at home and you're starting this practice. How prepared were you for that process? Do you have a good sense of how you're going to market your firm or how you're going to run your firm, how you're going to run your business, what tools you're going to use? Was that all set in concrete or did you kind of discover that as you went along?
So actually I have to make a change if my wife ever listens to this. We had four kids at the time and we had our fifth once we moved. So I would have gotten in trouble for that. The answer is no, I really didn't. I had no idea how to run a business. I had no idea where I would go with it, what I would do. I learned as I went, I guess is the best way to say it.
Yeah. And what kind of resources did you draw upon?
So I read a lot. I love nonfiction. I love reading books about growing your business. I love reading books about ideas. At the beginning, I was just reading books about other attorneys and other chances they took and marketing ideas and things like that. Along the way, I found a few things that I really gravitated to, but probably the first thing was The E-Myth. If anybody ever read The E-Myth, it's an amazing book. And the idea of running your own business and how the business has its own parts. And it has each section, you know, the famous idea that you have to work on the business, not just in the business, was a huge eye-opening idea for me.
And that is directly from that first book, The E-Myth.
Yeah.
And so you started working on your business. Do you recall at the time, you know, kind of where you focused? Was it getting clients, marketing to start with, to give you the capital to do more? Or do you recall the decisions that you had to make with respect to staffing and operational impact and that kind of thing?
Yeah, that's also a great question. Step one, I think for me, was more 100% getting clients, because in the field I'm in, it's a very unique field, federal employee labor relations. I do a little PI now, but that's just sort of a recent thing. But the federal employee side, I really needed to find a way to get clients. You're not going to find them on the corner. You know, you got to find your federal employees. So I did two things. I actually hopped in my car, drove around Texas since I was working in a labor union, I met a bunch of union presidents. I just sort of showed up on the door and I said, you know, the national AFGE, which is the large overrun union, has their 10 attorneys, or something like that, for your 200,000 employees. How would you like to have your own attorney who used to work, you know, with the unions on the East Coast as your own personal, you know, resource, and you don't have to wait in line with everyone else? I can assist you. And I built relationships. I remember I started in Fort Hood. I drove up there about 5 hours and met the president there. She's still a good friend of mine. San Antonio, here in Houston. And basically I just would go any. I remember went to Birmingham, Alabama. I went wherever I could talk to a union president, create a relationship. I did that. And I built these sort of retainer ideas where either if they had the money to pay because the union was bigger, they would pay me monthly. If they didn't, I would just answer questions for them, create relationships. So that was one idea. And then I moved on to a website, basically the idea of reaching out to the federal employee directly, not just going through a union, and became obsessed with figuring out the whole Google SEO world. Not that I knew what SEO meant back then, but the SEO world and the pay-per-click world. And that really is the lifeblood of my firm now, I'd say. But those two things, about 80% coming from Google and about, you know, 15% coming from the unions. And right. Now about, go ahead, sorry.
I had somebody refer to that one time as shoe leather marketing. I walked around town and met people where they were at, and I wore out the leather on my shoes, trying to do that. You kind of did the same thing, roaming all over the state of Texas looking for, you know, union presidents that would afford you the time to speak with them. I think that's, you know, that's the way people did business then. And then you were on the, I wouldn't say the cutting edge, but you were on the leading edge of law firm websites, because this was some time ago, right?
Yes, I was. I remember a good way to express that is I started with I think I may have tried to do my own website in the beginning. Yep. It wasn't long before I recognized that's not a good plan.
Futile. And,
yes. And I ended up working with a company. I think first company I worked with is called the Modern Firm. They did a wonderful job, and they reached a stage, and just as I was growing, where they said to me, "Hey, you're getting too big for us." And then I moved off to other companies. I'm with Scorpion now, and I've worked along the way. I've tried other companies, and the way I see it is what you can do as an entrepreneur is know your areas of weaknesses where you can't. It's probably the hardest thing, know where you can't do on your own, because as a solo and as a small firm, you always want to control things yourself. You know you did it, you've gotten this far, so you figure, you know, how can I hand it to someone else? But the reality is, there are certain things you have to hand to other people because you don't have the time and the expertise. So I think what makes for a good solo, a good small firm, law firm attorney, entrepreneur, is to be able to find the correct experts who can assist you and know when to trust them.
Yeah, I think I would add to that also to know what you can get somebody else to do cheaper than the cost of you doing it yourself. I think that's a two-pronged approach. So if you know this work somebody else can do and they can do it cheaper than me doing it myself, that's one aspect. And then this work is technically complex and I don't have the time to invest to learn how to do it. There are other people out there who can do it for me. I think that's the other problem.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. That's a very good point, especially when you bill hourly and you know what your hourly rate is and you can see it in black and white, what that hour is going to cost you. I mean, ideally, we'd bill every hour that we had. We all know that doesn't happen. But there are times when you can bill, when you have a project in front of you, and you have to know when it makes sense to step back from that project or when it makes sense to hand work to someone else so you can bill on it.
Exactly. And you were on the leading side of the pay-per-click, search engine optimization wave. I would say these days it's a little more challenging to take advantage of it the way you were able to.
Yeah, that's a good point. That'd be an interesting perspective because I'm in two different fields as far as advertising, and right. One of them is not hyper impacted by competition, and one of them is. And those two fields is federal employee law, and specifically, I also do just like retirement applications for federal employees. They have their own retirement system, federal disability retirement through OPM. Those areas definitely, when I first started, they had very little competition. Now they have decent competition, but I also do personal injury in Houston, which, you know, if you want to say pay-per-click would cost you about $80 a click. In the federal employee side, you might be looking at $500 to $1,000 per click. And we're not talking about per case. We're talking about per click to get somebody just to look at your website.
On the PI side.
Yeah.
Today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you in part by my friend, Coach Mark Rockwell. Now, that name sounds familiar. You might remember hearing him as our guest on episode 277 of The Law Entrepreneur. And during that episode, we talked about a lot of different things. And one of the is the fact that, did you know that only 12% of the law schools provide instruction on how to operate a law firm? 12%. That's one of the reasons managing a firm is difficult for most attorneys, particularly if they have no prior business education or experience. Wouldn't it be great if someone could guide you and save you the time and money figuring out how to grow and manage a profitable firm? Well, I highly recommend you visit with my friend, Coach Mark Rockwell. Mark helps individual attorneys, as well as law firm leadership teams, implement the structure and processes they need to grow and operate profitably. As a lawyer and a businessman, Mark knows firsthand what it's like to face the challenges of growing a profitable firm. Mark can help you do the same. Go to his website, coachrockwell.com, and download the Law Firm Checkup. That's Law Firm Checkup, which Mark will review with you at no cost. You'll get great insights on how to build a healthy, thriving law firm. You can call Mark directly at 503-784-7205 or visit his website at coachrockwell.com. That's coachrockwell.com. And my thanks to him personally for sponsoring today's episode. If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. The value in that now is you have to be able to niche down to a point that the cost is, you know, worth it for you. That wasn't always the case. And, you know, God love those people who were able to get on that train early. I think there are other platforms, I think now, platforms and services that are in the same place that pay-per-click and SEO was 5-10 years ago, that attorneys, solo practitioners, small firm practitioners probably would be better suited to look at now. You know, things like YouTube marketing, YouTube advertising, video marketing, content marketing at all.
Yeah. I find it actually frustrating now because there's so many different avenues.
Yeah.
And you don't know if your web company is going to be an expert in all those avenues. And you know that, you know, you can figure out one is good at something, and then they might just do an add-on to add a few sections in that, oh, we also do YouTube or we do this. But you're wondering if are they the experts in YouTube? So that it creates confusion. You have to sort of keep tracking the old things, the pay-per-click. I'm very careful to check my pay-per-click a lot. But at the same time, like you said, there are other areas you sort of have to be in or you're not hip, I guess I should say.
Well, I think, you know, you did back in the day and even now, you went where your clients are are, where they're hanging out, where they're doing business. And in today's day and age, there are other methodologies for reaching those, that same target audience. It's just, it gets more fractured. And I think that's the confusion, and that's the frustration that people feel, is like they have to be someplace, have some level of expertise in all of them. And, you know, maybe I still don't know whether that's true or not. I wonder if whether being, you know, real solid in one avenue first is the way to go, and then maybe adding on one at a time. I'm not really sure I have the expertise to evaluate that, but I know it's a challenge.
Yeah, it for sure is. You know, I always go back to, I once took a sales, for a while I thought of leaving law. So I got my financial, I got involved in financial planning for federal employees, got some licensing done. I really enjoyed it, but it was not really for me per se. But when I was doing it, I took a sales class, and I remember it was a Sandler sales class. And I remember one of the most important things when you're selling is that you need to find the pain point for the person. So it really stuck with me, because when a federal employee is, you know, there's a lot of employees, they're not super tech savvy necessarily on the, so I noticed that it's sort of like the later on in years, those people are the people who want help with their retirement and things like that. They're not necessarily going to be, you know, on Facebook all day or on, you know, Twitter. But at the same time, when they have an issue, when they're getting disciplined, or when they're injured and they need assistance, they're going to Google it. And so that's their pain point. That's the beauty, I guess, of Google. That's the brilliance of what they have. They've got the ultimate a pain point search engine, if you know what I mean.
For sure. Yeah. It marries those two things up. So, all right. So now you've embarked on this effort. You're building your practice, and things are getting successful down in Houston. At some point, you had to start adding staff. You got more than you could do. How did you go about that? What were you looking for in terms of staffing, and what were some of the, you know, the goods and the bad part of staffing a law firm?
So step one for me was to, I happen to live in a religious Jewish community over here. So I reached out to people that I sort of was friendly with. Ended up, somebody wanted to move here to Houston. He sent me his resume. And I was looking specifically for someone who liked litigating, because I wanted to run the business and I'd had enough of spending my days and nights litigating. So I found a partner Stephen Goldenzweig is my partner. He loves litigating. So we started working together, and then we started hiring people from our community. So you're talking about the positives and negatives. Some of the positives were that they were had a lot of were bright people. They had a lot of drive. But some of the negatives were when you hire people with a lot of drive, sometimes you find that they want to be entrepreneurs and go off on their own. So it's a delicate balance of, you know, at this point, you know, we're not hiring friends anymore is the best way to say it. We're hiring the most talented people we can, and we're hiring the people, you know, we believe that will enhance the company. So we've moved sort of from the friend model to the Indeed model.
Right. And in doing so, now I know you've added offices. So you have an office in Baltimore and what was Atlanta?
Atlanta and also we have someone working out of Connecticut.
Oh, up in Connecticut. Okay. So as you go through that process, now you're distributing your workforce around. So that becomes its own challenge as well. Tell us a little bit about what role technology plays in being able to provide the services that you offer.
Sure. So, I mean, the best way to say it is without technology, my firm would not be possible. And I had
pretty clear.
Yeah. I have a number of people who wanted to work for me. They either knew about me, or they were distant friends, or we heard about them and they didn't want to move to Houston, which I can understand because, you know, you don't want to uproot your family and there are reasons to live in other places. So what happened was they asked if they could just work from where they're at, and it didn't cause a problem for us. In some ways it helped. As you see, on our website, we have an office in Baltimore. You know, in the federal employee world, you want an office in the Baltimore, D.C. area. So it made a lot of sense. And it helps with the Google searches for that neighborhood. We specifically actually wanted that office in addition We have a great attorney over there and a paralegal. Same thing in Atlanta. That's also a friend who wanted to work with me and he didn't want to move. And he talked me into it. So I said, okay, we'll have an Atlanta office. So we have an Atlanta office, and that's kind of, it sort of grew amongst itself. And with technology, you know, it's interesting, when COVID hit, it really wasn't all that different for us, because we were used to doing everything via Microsoft Teams or Zoom, or we use Slack. We Slack each other all day. We use Clio. So everything's basically cloud-based, and really it doesn't cause many issues, except maybe for training. That can be a little bit of an issue.
Yeah. Yeah. And along those lines, I think you're going to find that's going to be more and more the model that everybody follows and adopts going forward. I don't think we're ever going to go back to a single location where everybody has to be in the office, you know, full time. I just don't think that's realistic anymore. But it does put a premium on being able to select the right people and the right technology and the right, you know, resources to make that happen. And you mentioned, you know, that you're a Myers-Briggs fan.
Yes.
Myers-Briggs, or was the other one? Yeah, Myers-Briggs. So do you use those personality profiles in the hiring process?
We actually have an HR consultant, Jill Koop, with Energize. She's amazing. And she has her own test assessment that she has us send out to people. And then she tries to match the personalities together. So we don't use Myers-Briggs, though. The truth is, I love Myers-Briggs. I probably wouldn't mind using it.
But you do use some type of, like I said, personality assessment. I think that also is something that gaining more and more traction. I was never a big fan, me personally, but the more I talk to people, the more I see people using it effectively, whether it's Myers-Briggs or any of the other, you know, evaluation tools, the more I see of it, the more I'm being drawn over to that way of thinking, that I think it can offer you a lot of insight and perhaps ease some of those training and staffing issues that you talked about.
For sure. Yeah. Actually, we somewhere along the way hired a handwriting expert. She's a jury consultant, who's a retired jury consultant, who analyzes your handwriting and tells the personality. And we were all stunned by the accuracy of the things she was saying. Yeah. It's pretty amazing, actually.
That's pretty forward thinking.
Yeah. Someone once did that to me when I was in financial planning.
Is that
I wanted
right?
to work for their firm. They ran it by me. They sent me a copy of it, and I was so like stunned by the accuracy that I was like, I'm going to use this. So it's not easy to find those people, but they do exist.
No, I suppose not. So what were, in your mind, then, now you're successful, you've grown, you said you had, what, 29, 30 member staff between attorneys and paralegals, and was that just
about
attorneys?
23, about okay. 23 staff, 8 attorneys.
And 8 attorneys. What were the biggest challenges along the way? The ones that, you know, kept you up at night the most?
There's no doubt the biggest challenge is personalities, is dealing with individual
relationships.
Yeah. Relationships. It's if you were to figure out the amount of time we've spent just dealing with, you know, people's feelings and how they can relate to each other, how people can get along. Do people work as teams? Do they, you know, is there infighting, those type of things? It clearly is a huge a time suck, I would say. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can imagine.
Well, I've been there. Been there, yeah. Done that. So yeah, can imagine only too well. Is there any recommendations you have to try and address that? Have you done some cultural building exercises or brought in anybody to help, you know, work with the corporate culture of the firm?
Yeah, so it's definitely something we want to do more of in the future. But we did, as I was saying before, we brought in that HR expert, and it helps to have someone objective. It helps to have some, like, because, you know, we're human beings. We become friendly with people. We care about them as human beings. But you know, but the business it takes on a life of its own, and it has to be treated like a business. And a lot of times you learn by making mistakes. You end up making decisions based on people's feelings, and you end up harming the business. And just like everything in life, you have to balance objective with subjective. You can't be cold and mean to people, and you can't treat people, you have to treat people the way you want to be treated at all times. But at the same time, you do need to be objective about what's best for the business. Like, it's a living, breathing thing. And so having someone who's like an HR expert, who's not physically in the office with us, who contracts with us and can, you know, weed through it all and give us an analysis of whether this is a healthy culture or not a healthy culture, has been immensely valuable for us. And that's definitely the future of how we're going to continue to do. We may have an HR person in office, but we're always going to have that external HR expert who can come in and do the team building exercises and tell us when things are not in a healthy way and help us work on fixing it.
Are they using a HR platform to help manage that process? I know there's a few out there.
So they're not, but you know, that's the kind of, I love tech, and it would be the kind of thing I would love, and it may happen in the future. We've had a hard time finding someone in-house for HR. We've been really looking at that. And I think once we finally find that right person, then maybe we'll, at that point, look to have some type of platform like that. It's hard when you're in the middle, because you're not a solo, but you're not a big firm. So that middle stage is very difficult as far as whether you have an in-house HR person, whether, you know.
Well, we're starting to see more of this from a fractional standpoint, where you can bring in, as you said, an HR consultant that acts as the, you know, director of human resources on a fractional basis. And that, I think you're going to see more of that. And I would not be surprised to see more responsive cloud-based platforms to cater to these smaller to mid-sized firms, because you're right, it's in a blind spot.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely, that's been one of the hardest things for us, finding that operations manager / HR person. Yeah. We're still looking. That's one of the things we're doing right now.
Tell me then about some of the things that you think were your better successes, your bigger successes, the things that had the biggest impact on your growth and success.
I think it's the biggest impact is probably a mixture of the same things that we call the hardest things that I was just saying. It's relationships with people, working with attorneys and having a great synergy where you can, like for instance, we have certain attorneys, I can tie the whole thing in together. You get to know their personality. You've got the attorney who does appeals because they're really good at writing and they love thinking things through. You've got the attorney who can hold the client's hand, and you find the client who needs the hand holding, and you pair them together. You've got the attorney who's really great at settlements, and you find a good case. So matching up the personalities of the people when you find the ones you trust with the correct clients and with the correct cases, I think that's been a lot of our success, number one. And number two, I would say technology. Really, there's no getting around it. And as a kid, I was one of these kids who, I think I had a TRS-80. I used to do programming, you know, my color computer. I was in a computer club, but I was always in the humanities. I wasn't a science person by any means, but at the same time, I was intrigued by being on the cutting edge of technology. And that's really served me well, because to me, it's fun. Like, it's always fun. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people are that way, to find the latest gadget, this or that. Of course, you have to do it. You know, it can't dominate your life, because we all know that technology does dominate our lives. But at the same time, to be able to use it in a way where it's the struggle to benefit you and not have it control you, if you can do it, it really can make a huge difference.
And well, you mentioned Clio and Slack as two cornerstones of your tech suite. What else is in there that you really like that you can't live without?
So, you know, I was saying before, the Teams, Microsoft Teams, which you could be interchange it with Zoom, but Teams is nice because we can use the calendar. I mean, that really allows us to almost be in the same room, and that's, you know, it's not quite the same, but it's really incredible. That's number one. I mean, look, I have two screens right now, so I'll tell you, on one screen, I'm a Mac person, 100% Mac. On my right screen, I have my workspace. On my left screen, I have messages from Apple, which is the same as texting for me. I have my inbox, which is calling in email addresses. I'm in-house counsel for AFG 1923, which is kind of funny. It's the same local that I used to be an employee of years and years ago. I recently became their in-house counsel. So I have an email address just for them. And I have that pulling in with my Pines Federal email and my PI email. It's all in one inbox. To the right of that, I have WhatsApp, where I stay in touch. And then on the bottom of my screen, I have two browsers and one with Clio's calendar up and one with just Clio in general up. And then, like I said, that's all on the left side, the left monitor. On the right monitor, I do my work. And sometimes I have to shut off the left monitor to get work done. But it's sort of like my mission control, I guess, is the way
right.
to say it.
Right. Well, you know, I applaud you for only having two screens. Because the true mission control specialist has three.
Touché.
Have you taken a look at the Universal Control? This is an inside geeky baseball.
No, but I'm going to now.
Yeah. So Universal Control allows you to use your iPad as an external screen.
Oh, that's awesome.
No wires, no connections. You just bring it close to your Mac computer. They say hello to each other, and it's a second monitor right there.
Oh, man. My third. You got me excited there.
Exactly. Well, listen, Eric, this has been great. I enjoyed spending some time with you. Tell our audience how they can reach out to you if they have any questions or follow-up that they want to hit you up on.
Oh, sure. Thank you. I've also enjoyed it as well, and I really appreciated the opportunity. So my website is pinesfederal.com, P-I-N-E-S-F-E-D-E-R-A-L, pinesfederal.com. If you're a federal employee, if you were just living in Texas and you, God forbid, got into a car accident, or you slipped and fell, you could go to toughinjurylawyers.com. That is our personal injury website. Thank you so much for this opportunity. Awesome.
Well, it's great, Eric. And I wish you all the best of luck. And next time I'm down in the Houston area, I'd love to come say hi. So thanks again for being a guest today on The Law Entrepreneur.
My pleasure. Take care.
Well, that will do it for today, boys and girls. I want to thank our sponsors, Ruby, long-term sponsors, Ruby Receptionists, and our newest sponsor, Coach Rockwell. And I encourage you to visit their sites and find out more about Ruby and Coach Rockwell. While you're at it, you can swing on by thelawentrepreneur.com. You see what we have going on there. If that doesn't satisfy you, you can find us on Facebook, and Twitter, and Instagram at The Law Entrepreneur. Just do a search on that. And if you'd be so kind, I would greatly appreciate it if you went to your podcast platform, wherever you are listening to us, and leave us a rating and a review. If you find this is useful and informative, it does help our visibility and helps to continue to be here for you on a weekly basis, and certainly helps us keep the lights on here for another 5 years or more. So thanks again for being a listener here today on The Law Entrepreneur. Well, how about that? That's a wrap for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I'd like to thank our sponsors once again, as usual, Daylight by Market Circle, Spotlight Branding, Ruby, as in Ruby Receptionists, and our newest sponsor, Security Plus. If you have a chance, swing on by our website at www.lawentrepreneur.com. You can check out a bunch of information and resources there. And if that doesn't satisfy your needs, swing on by our Facebook page or Twitter page. You can find those just by simply searching for The Law Entrepreneur. And if you'd be so kind, I would greatly appreciate it if you go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and an honest review. If you find this podcast is helpful and that you're getting value out of it, it does help with our visibility and ensures that we're going to be there for another 5 years or so, as this has been quite the run. And I'm greatly appreciative of your interest in The Law Entrepreneur.